Welcome back to City Living with Churchill, a weekly podcast that chronicles the different experiences, communities, and highlights of being a young professional in New York City. This week, we continue our conversation with Father Paul Daniels, where we really take a step back and reflect back on the past 2 years, having a conversation about the evolution of personal growth that happened in the past year, the stillness of the city. How do we take that and move forward? And how do we sort of process all the many, many, many events that have happened in the past year?
So the pandemic, you know, for clergy people, has been defined by an incomplete encounter with death at the point of burying or at the point of interring ashes, but not the full process of blessing somebody and walking with them into this transition.
I remember last year, you know, we all were going through the collectiveness of, the pandemic trauma. I say that saying last year as if we're not still going through a pandemic. The pandemic is still very existent. But I'm curious, what was it like for priests and pastors during the pandemic? Well, from your experience, you know, what was it like to still continue the church without there being a physical building?
Yeah, well, you know, I think I said earlier that I think that my call to the priesthood is about accompanying people into wonder. And that's, you know, one part of it. But also a part of the vocation of the priest or the pastor is to accompany people into death. And when you don't, when you can't do that, people transition without having their lives memorialized by the community. Mm-hmm. Are the communities that help to impart the faith. And I can't imagine what it must have been like for a person, for so many people to have died without family and without clerics to hold them as they moved on. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of clergy friends, you know, early on in the pandemic, who had parishioners every week who would be found dead in their apartments.
Oh, wow.
And who had funerals week after week, you know, of only a few people. So the pandemic, you know, for clergy people, has been defined by an incomplete encounter with death. A encounter with death that is only at the point of burying or at the point of interring ashes, but not the full process of blessing somebody and walking with them into this transition. I know people love Zoom. I know a lot of my friends loved Zoom church in particular, and I absolutely hated it. if I'm being honest, you know, a part of, again, I mean, for me, a part of church is about ritual. Mm-hmm. It's about the physicality and the sensuality of movement and smells and tastes. And it's a performative moment whereby you kind of, you're conjuring holiness, you know?
Yeah.
And the conjuring of holiness in ritual, I think, is more effective in the building than it is in the church. And so my church, we did Zoom and things like that, but we recently returned, you know, today was our first day back in the church. And, I have been feeling uncharacteristically anxious and I've been acting uncharacteristically out of character for the last like week and a half. And like, I could feel the anxiety in my body from my stomach all the way up to my chest for lots of reasons. Lots of stuff is going on in life, you know? And I just feel spent, very low. And you know, when you have anxiety and you're feeling it and you recognize, oh, I'm not breathing. I've been like holding my breath. I've been doing that a lot. And then I walked out of the first church service back in the building today. And I got home and I took off my clerical clothes, and I was breathing. I was at peace for like the first time in like 10 or 11 days. And I realized, like, oh, like, that's the power or the possibility of ritual practice, of the conjuring, of the healing, of the spirit of God, of, like, being back in the space where you just, something's happening that I can't quite explain. It's a mystery. But I was transformed today, you know? And so there's nothing like being in the building.
That is beautiful. I mean, and that's why, to our, you know, when we talk about the role of the church, I kind of, I go back and forth because, you know, for someone, I do understand in the holiness of certain spaces. I remember, you know, one of the places I also found refuge before the pandemic was at the church, you know, every first Saturday, Catholic Underground, in the Upper West Side. I usually go down there and just enjoy the silence, the stillness of that space.
That's right.
And I do find those moments, to me, were also the moments where I took the most deep breaths I ever take, more connected. And so I'd identify with that experience of feeling so very suffocating experience, but then walking into that space and just going through that experience with people and they're like,
yes. I mean, literally, we at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, you know, it's a huge space. Yeah. It's the sixth largest church in the world. It's the largest church in America. Two football fields long and a football. And we use incense. And so in order for incense to be effective in a space that big, it's got to be, it's got to really fill up the room. And, you know, to like just walk into a space and smell this beautiful fragrance and to hear this organ just filling up this Gothic cathedral and to just see the streams of light coming through the stained glass and to hear these beautiful voices soaring. It just was like, oh, my God. You know, like, how could I not? You know, it just felt so, it enters into your body so viscerally, you know. And so, I think that we're lucky to have, like you called them, those spaces of stillness, you know. And you've mentioned sort of the intentionality around cultivating stillness. You know, it's not just another thing you do, but it is an intentional practice of making holiness or sacredness beautiful.
And to your point, though, about your feeling of that suffocation, I do feel, you know, I would not be surprised, you know, with things being shut down last year and, you know, some churches are still not open. Those spaces where, for some, most folks, their therapy, their escape, their moments to take a deep breath, their moments of not suffocating. And, you know, I wonder, you know, not just the physical experience of COVID, but also the mental toll. Living in a city like New York City, where it is always in motion, always moving, some folks found, like myself, to the church. Now I went once a month. I'm sure people go every Sunday as your own form of refuge and your own form of, you know, deep breaths. So as in, so they, that got taken away from them. So as a priest, I know you mentioned, you know, the Zoom calls and you didn't really enjoy them. I don't think anyone still enjoys the Zoom calls, but how did you then transform your sermon to sort of speak to that experience that, you know, I'm at home in my tiny apartment, locked in within the square foot walls, suffocating and trying to find and hear the word to feel a little bit more connected to spirituality, to the church, even though I know that, you know, the building shouldn't move your faith, but still, how did you have to transform your sermons to now speak in this new world we're living in?
That's such a good question. So I should also say that I became a priest in the middle of the pandemic and on December 12th, 2020. So it was like from the frying pan into the fire. Well, in the Episcopal Church, when you ordain, priests are first ordained deacons. Mm-hmm. They're called transitional deacons, and then they're ordained priests. Mm-hmm. So you're a deacon for 6 months, and then you're a priest for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Deacons take the gospel into the world, and priests bless the sacraments and baptize and marry, right? So they're just different roles. But you're always a deacon, you're always a priest. So I was ordained a deacon in June and ordained a priest in December. And I had no idea who was in this community of people. Mm-hmm. I had just been hired. I knew so little about them except for what I learned about them from Zoom. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea how to curate my sermons, except I knew that I couldn't lie or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like I had to, not that I would have lied if we were in the church, but like I couldn't, the sermonizing had to be about intimacy. Mm. I think that all of my sermons, I wouldn't recommend listening to them. I think all of them have been on to some degree about intimacy, and about closeness and about interiority. I think I would have talked about those things in the cathedral as well, but also the performative aspect of preaching changes. You know, I wasn't as big in my gestures, right? And things like that. It's just like sitting in front of a wall and being very slight. But I never figured it out. I never felt like I got it right the entire time.
Why do you think you never got it right?
It never felt right.
Never felt right.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have the space.
Because I didn't have the space to like move my body and like jump up and down and like... Mm-hmm. see people's faces make reactions to the things I was saying, you know, to see people, you know, just like a sermon's a conversation if you're a good preacher, you know, and you might write a sermon and then you might read it as to the people, you might see things happening. As you see things happening, you know, extemporaneously change stuff. According to what the room is telling you, you follow the spirit, and you just can't do that on Zoom. It's recorded. And I just never felt like I could really connect to people.
And, you know, sort of speaking around the connection point and sort of, you know, the general, you know, during that time I don't want to speak for all the young folks, as we call them. There is sort of a lot of things going on, right? We're sort of, got swept in this turmoil of different things are shutting down. We're losing our jobs. You know, we find ourselves sort of struggling and working from home. We had to sort of develop this whole new lifestyle. Hope became this thing that was almost so far away. And it was like a disease that just kept progressively very fast. And almost to the point, I think some folks always felt like, is this it? Is this the end of the world in a sense? When you think about it, New York, at the time, was the first more hit by all of this. You know, we were the first to really get the brunt of the COVID virus, at least in the United States, I mean. And, you know, for some, right, you know, we talk a lot. I remember as a kid, or at least when I lived in an apartment in Silver Spring, Maryland, I always get a knock on the door, and it's always the Jehovah's Witness person, and they had their little flyer.
Right.
And it was always like Jesus doing something with the poor. But I always ask them the same question. It's the same question I still continue to contemplate. And I'm going to ask you this question. Because I think it came to my mind several times during the pandemic. And it's to say, you know, if there is a God and God does exist, to your opinion and to what you can comprehend, your understanding of the oneness, why then did we suffer? Why did 2020 have to happen?
The easy questions, Churchill. I do appreciate all the qualifiers. According to your understanding, as far as you can, I thank you very much for that. according to the oneness, right? I believe in human evolution. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that, you know, I think Darwinian evolution was onto something.
Mm-hmm.
Even in this racialized narrativizing.
I think, and I'm going to cut you thought of, I think of Darwinian evolution as evolution of the physical.
As evolution of the physical world.
Yes. I do believe also that in the spiritual evolution, which is moving to a multisensory human being, the Darwinian evolution to me is more adapting to our physical environment.
Yeah, I feel like they're so intensely entangled. And I think that human creatures as, and this is where some people may disagree, I think human creatures as accidents of evolution also are strange creatures with the capacity to like make things, right? And to do like to do stuff and to like build stuff. And I think I can't pretend to know the science, but I think that the world that human creatures have created with our capacity to do and make stuff, again, because of a finitude, we don't know the results, consequences of everything that we do and make and put together. We create stuff that makes other stuff that's bad, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that that's the answer, the ultimate answer to the question of how things like, in part, how things like natural disasters and pandemics start is, you know, sort of the intermingling of the world, intermingling of the things in the world that we created, perhaps maybe haphazardly, and so on and so forth. In terms of where God is in that, I think that, again, if God is the oneness of all things, I'm not really thinking about God as being a human like other humans.
Mm-hmm.
Who just stops, who plays chess, or, you know, I think if God is the oneness of all things and we can't quite imagine the oneness of all things, then God, whatever activity God is doing in the world is also beyond our capacity to articulate apart from, and this is why I think the teaching of ancient wisdom traditions is important, the teaching of Revelation. Which again, well, tells us that God is love and that God is always consummating the universe to itself. I think that God was and is present in this moment in ways that don't look like the things that we may want immediately. I think that there is perhaps healing happening and reconciling happening and saving happening or whatever in ways that we may not quite have the capacity to understand or point to readily. But I don't think that it's God punishing. I don't think that God created the pandemic. I don't think that God is allowing the pandemic. I think that human creatures have free will and volition and do things in the world that make things happen. And we have to deal with the consequences of the things that we do haphazardly and without care about or care for what the consequences could be. And I'm not trying to be flippant about it. I think that that's why we have to be more appreciative of the kinds of decisions that we make in the way that we live, precisely so that we can mitigate the planting and growing of violence, whether it be ecological or political or whatever. I think for me, God was and is in the pandemic in something in my own spirit being made more tender to the reality and the preciousness of life. And that tenderness, I pray, will give me and others who also feel that a greater sense of what our lives could look like. And also then the will to begin reimagining the world in the spirit of that tenderness and that preciousness.
I like what you said, because it sort of they're about human, you know, interaction and human intentionality, because I love intentions. Mm. And, you know, Newton's third law of motion. For every action, yep, there is an equal reaction. And whether that be from a personal choice as we make as individuals, to our plural as community, to the grander scheme as a nation, to the grander scheme as a continent, the grander scheme as humanity. Mm. You know, I think the collectiveness of our action does have repercussions. And I do struggle with that, because I think when I have this conversation, when I ask the question, then if, you know, why do we have to suffer in New York this way? And that's the kind of question I kept asking myself. Why am I stuck in here? I kept going back then to, you know, God help those who help themselves. And so what have I done to help myself to meet have him halfway? That was one thing I thought about. But then I had to also reframe for myself this whole idea of God as this whole jumping into just like, I got to cut. Yeah. I got to kiss the boo-boo. Let me put a bandaid on that.
Right.
Kind of God.
Right.
There's always every moment of my life has to be smooth.
Right.
Kind of God. And it reminded me of an essay, which I read by Seneca, called, you know, if God exists, why then do good men suffer? Mm-hmm. And in that, he makes an argument that suffering is a form of, if man doesn't face adversity, how does one know oneself? Right. How does one have appreciation of things that they have? And so that brought me the idea of gratitude. And so that's how I sort of digest at least my experience of 2020 in living in the city, and just many things. And then you had, you know, the George Floyd situation, and mm-hmm. you had then, you know, and so you found yourself stuck in this almost like a combustion of like different things just rolling you. And so, and to me, it was just hard sometimes to see the hope.
Yeah.
It was hard sometimes to see the light. But then fate, you know, fate is seen, is walking blindly mm-hmm. and walking out of sight. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back after a quick message. Hi, this is your host, Churchill. City Living with Churchill is a one-man team. Yes, I am the one in the background doing all of the producing, storytelling, trying to pull together the guests and all of the work it takes to put a podcast together. If you love the stories you've been hearing, if you've loved the communities we've brought together, check the description wherever you listen to this podcast. You'll find a link where you can leave me a small donation. All donations are really welcome and it will go a long way to helping me continue to tell stories, help me continue to pursue this passion, and can help me continue to bring you stories from all around the young professionals in this city. So what would you say, because I want to talk about sort of, you know, what are some of the lessons and things you think, because I have some of mine, I just mentioned some of mine.
Yeah.
That we've learned as part of the pandemic, because I think what the pandemic forced us to do, if we're looking at the cup, not half empty, half full, is that it helped us be still for a moment. The whole world was still, and in that still, we all had to look at ourselves, something that we have been running away from in New York City, especially where we're always on the go, always doing, always onto the next thing. For a moment, we had to really sit and say, this is where you are.
Right.
And that still to me came with so many different lessons. But what do you think, or what were your lessons and things you think we had learned or should learn from that time of being still?
That we're not okay yet. And that we won't be for a very long time, many of us. And that the tricky thing about stillness is that it presents as much the possibility for reckoning as it does peace. And if you don't have the requisite tools, communities, practices in which to understand the internal reckoning, the encounter with the shadow self, the encounter with the parts of oneself that are addicted, are afraid, if you don't have the requisite tools to encounter the reckoning with grace, I think some people may run from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the stillness is squandered.
Mm.
Or some people may feel debilitated by or paralyzed by the reckoning. Mm. And so the stillness isn't squandered, but it becomes like a cloud, you know? It becomes ominous, it becomes frightening in a way that it doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the lessons we should take from that in relation to stillness, and the pandemic, quarantine in particular, in relation to stillness, is to return to it regularly.
Mm-hmm.
As we, and to return to the possibility of reckoning regularly, not as a moment from which we learn something and now we're good, but as a regular practice of doing an inward inventory of how am I showing up in the world? What about my life feels, what about my life, my being needs to be attended to?
Mm.
How do I treat people when things are tense? Who do I love? Who loves me? You know, what do I care about? How do my cares and my loves contribute to reimagining what the world can be? I think these are things that we constantly have to sit with. So I think that the pandemic has taught me that we're not okay and we won't be okay for a long time. And that the only way in which we might have some semblance of being okay is if we continue to practice the work of stillness, the work of self-reckoning, the work of internal sitting that always has as its ultimate goal to be well connected, well integrated to the world around us. Again, and I can't let this go, but I think that the goal of the spiritual life, as I understand it, is to become sensitive to the world. To become empathetic in a way that allows for an almost like a melding of personality and a melding of life. And stillness is a route through which we encounter what the roadblocks are that disallow for that melding. Yeah.
Because when you're still, you can hear yourself.
That's right. Yeah.
And I 100% I agree, right? How you sort of framed it up. We live in a city that thrives on not being still.
Yes.
A city that thrives on doing.
Right.
The whole idea of the city that never sleeps is that literally you're always in motion to something.
Yeah.
You're always in motion to find, to work, to party. You're always in this sense of pleasure. Whether it be, there is a level of pleasure from work. We hit our jobs. There is some pleasure from that. And there's also pleasure from the general libations we share in community, we share with friends. From even just going to Central Park, and you're always in this constant motion of trying to extract and always trying to enjoy without being still.
Right.
And I think that for a moment in 2020, we sat in whatever we were running from, whatever ailments, as part of that motion, part of that always moving, we never get a chance to look at ourselves in the mirror.
Right.
And I sometimes mean that literally. I think last year was the first time for a long time, noticed I actually looked at myself in the mirror.
That's fascinating.
I actually looked at me.
What did you feel when
I was like, that's me. This is practice I'm trying to do more. Never stand there and look at myself in the mirror. And I just sort of walk in, take a shower, out, take a little brush my mouth, out.
Right.
There's never sort of a, that's you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that same level of motion, the same thing we carry out in the city, of we're going to a job. After the job, we get home, we eat, we sleep, we watch, we spend hours binging, mm-hmm. go to bed. Whatever ailment or headache or everything that's ailing us, we never even listen to ourselves because what we're going to repeat the same cycle. And even when life is nudging us, you know, we still don't listen to it. We say, well, New York broke us. And whatever, yeah. it could be life trying to tell you, well, there's a problem. And I think for us, a lot of us last year, especially us young folks that love the city for the sake that it's always in motion, yeah. where it's enchanting. It's an enchantment we're all under.
Yeah.
I think the enchantment ended last year.
Yeah.
I think for a second we had to sit still in whatever uneasiness, whatever uncomfortness to realize there is a level of addiction to a lot of things we do. We're addicted to the city. We're addicted to our mm-hmm. constant motion of drinking. We're addicted mm-hmm. to always wanting to satisfy whatever space that we don't want to sit in because we're afraid of what we are or mm-hmm. who we are mm-hmm. or even the self-discovery that it takes.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that it forced us to be still. And what did we discover? And that's why, you know, I think there's a lot of young folks right now, myself included, they're all sort of thinking about who am I? What do I want to be? What right. do I want my legacy to be?
Right.
We're all sort of going through transformation of their jobs.
Right.
We're all sort of pick up this new trade and really thinking, fuck it, I'm going to pursue my passion.
Right.
There's a reason for that because we're still. And we all realize that it all doesn't make sense. The whole construct
right.
that we've built around New York City doesn't make sense.
Right.
And that we have to deconstruct it to bring a different essence of who we are into it.
Yeah.
And so I think, to me, I agree wholeheartedly with you.
I think that's wise. I'm really compelled by the idea that you're surrounded by multiple people who are thinking, I've got to think differently about, you know, we talked about it earlier, thinking differently about time, like mm-hmm. how time works. Why yeah. spend time? On the one hand, no, it's okay to want to be connected to people.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other to say, well, how much is that wanting to be connected, a desire to be distracted, mm-hmm. you know? And I do find that this question about like, what do I do
mm-hmm.
with my life is a really big one too. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I spend my time? I don't want to go into an office anymore, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to sit on Zoom. I don't want to be available on Zoom from 9 to 5. I want to be free from living the life that it seems I'm required to live because clearly life is short.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really wise takeaway. Yeah,
it is. It is.
I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah. I mean, and to your point, you know, you mentioned about, you know, going back and we're all going out a lot now, and it's because I do think social engagement is very important. We're social animals.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of me also questions,
right.
It's like, you know, an addict in relapse.
Right. No, I know. Yeah, exactly. I've drank more than I've ever drank.
Me
I've
too.
Partied more than I've ever partied. I'm just like, what is going on? Yeah. And it's like, I want to be okay with it, and I am.
Mm.
But I feel like I'll be okay with it for sure when I don't feel like I have to do it. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, I'm trying. Yeah, it's such a hard balance to strike. Like every fashion week was this, you know, it's just like 7 days a week, yeah. you know?
I know. And I also find myself also now sometimes doing things very out of character.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, but that's not you.
No, yeah.
Even things I think I would do before the pandemic, I'm like, I find myself questioning this new being I am.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not just because it's the drinkiness component of it. I mean, I agree with you. I have drank the most I've ever drank my whole life.
Yeah.
Drinking almost became like a new it's become so socialized that it's like drinking tea.
Right.
Right. You know, because we spend so much time indoors drinking. So it's not. Yeah. I think the whole idea of community and connection has also been transformed.
Yeah.
And that's why I call it, you know, it's almost as if we're an addict in relapse. We're trying to sort of go back.
Yes.
Rather than trying to move forward in a new world
yeah.
that has been molded. The world has changed.
Yeah.
And so we're grasping for the old world with the world that's really moving forward.
Yeah. How much serial dating have you done? Have you been doing serial dating?
Serial dating. I won't call it serial dating. No, I mean, I've been more conscious about my dating life.
Okay, I feel like everyone else I know is like, everybody is like so ready to date. Now, I don't know if that's like a
yeah.
end of summer, like cuffing season thing, or if it's just like people are really feeling the residue of loneliness.
And we're coming getting towards the same, I mean, winter months where it also gets to be very indoor-y.
And yeah, that's right.
I get that. But I also think a lot of people in New York tend to be aspirational daters, in the sense that even with the introspection of the past year, folks still feel, don't understand that it takes work to involve another human being in your life. And I say, and the reason I reference introspection is because if we were taking that, if we based off last year, we spent a lot of time facing ourselves, understanding our craziness, our nuances, our complexities. Why then do we think it's the easy thing to merge life with another human being?
Oh my gosh. Same
variable.
That is so great. That is so great. That's a great insight. Yeah, no, exactly.
It's work. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of mismatches. It's a lot of failure. Yeah,
that's right.
Like every startup, it's a bunch of failure.
Yeah.
Then eventually you're like, oh, there it is. And sometimes it works like heaven. But I think we need to understand and take the work we did in 2020 of the introspection of understanding.
If we did the work.
If we did the work. Yes. That's the caveat. If we did the work.
We have to keep returning to it.
Yeah. I mean, because if you were like me in the first half of the pandemic, you just binged a bunch. I watched all the Lord of the Rings movies. I did like a Harry Potter marathon. I did Hunger Games. I just kept watching all this
movie. That's intense.
All in one weekend, actually. So it wasn't even like.
You binged watch 17-hour movies.
Yes.
In a weekend.
But that was my way of coping. And so we all had out, and some of us just kept drinking. And I respect everyone's way of coping.
Yeah.
But even when however you went about it, you were running from something. You understood what that is. And you were running from it to blind yourself not to see it.
There was one week I had four slabs of ribs.
That's fun.
In one week. Yeah. I was eating my life away.
Yeah. We were emotionally eating, emotionally impulsively doing things.
Right.
So I think there is a level of enlightenment that came from last year that I think we all can take from about ourselves, whether we consciously want to implement that or not unconsciously, but it is still there.
Yeah.
The curtain came down and we saw what was behind it. We understand at least ourselves with eyes unclouded. As a group of folks, there are always quote unquote, and like I don't like using this word, but woke. We were wokeified by ourselves.
You're hopeful about that. I'm less hopeful about that.
I think I am hopeful about it because I think it does happen. I do think because in your reference to dating, that folks are not utilizing the work. When I say this, I'm not trying to say I'm sort of, I'm a perfect person or I've sort of
figured it out.
I haven't. I still, in my own experience in dating, have found my failures. I find myself still being triggered by old things about me.
Right.
That I've discovered in the pandemic that I don't want to be.
Right.
But the thing is, I think and I believe it's a continual work.
Yeah.
We still all have so much life ahead of us. And I think it's accepting to and showing up every day to do that constant work.
Yeah.
On self, on community. And as I mentioned, we are responsible for the people that love us.
That's right.
And so continuing that work there.
I think the other thing I learned from the pandemic and just in terms of doing the work is which friends I was closest to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a ton of friends.
Yeah.
But there were a couple relationships. One is my best friend from college. And that's, of course, we love each other, talk every day. And then two more relationships just blossomed. These two friendships just blossomed. And we would talk every single day and check in and just shoot the shit. And just, it was amazing.
Mm.
And we were caring for each other, basically, across time and space. We were doing the work with each other. And I do think that in terms of returning to the world, quote unquote, it's easier to identify in the relationships that I'm developing, platonic or otherwise, or romantic or whatever, what it looks like for someone to do the work. We were all in shit and in shitty situations and scared, and we still wanted to talk to each other every day. I was like, oh, okay, maybe that's what not that I didn't know this, but just to call it to mind and to operate out of that space, that like love looks like being able to work through shit with a sense of like ease and desire to work through it, and companionship and understanding. That's really shaped how I'm thinking about relationships and friendships moving forward. It's like, damn, these people called me at their lowest. You know, we exposed ourselves to each other. This is what love feels like. This is what the possibility of love feels like. You know?
Yeah. No, I 100% agree that knowing now what we now know, it does shape and have, at least, again, I always caveat this because it seems not everyone got the memo. And some of us, in some form of fashion, missed it. However, still, you know, showing up at your lowest, even when you feel like you need to show up, that to me is love.
Yeah, it's also
the power of vulnerability, and it's also courage.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that as we navigate into this new world, the pandemic is still going on, but as we navigate into this new world, let us not sort of put to history and the history books only that what we experience and the lessons we learn about ourselves, but that we carry it into a new form of how we engage others, how we move about in the city, how we engage with the city, and we bring about it a level of intentionality about our actions within the city and where we want to go. And that it doesn't have to be, I don't think New York City has to break you, but rather that you have to commune with the city to form something, some new bond, whether that bond looks like a new relationship, that bond looks like a new relationship with yourself or with someone else, or the bond looks like a new job that is more fits your what you think your purpose is. But it's sort of changing the narrative and the energy that a city can still move and be still. There is a stillness in that movement. So I think that's how I think we move forward.
A stillness in movement. I love that.
All right.
It's always holding together the opposites. You know, that's the beautiful world. Amen.
Hallelujah. All right, I just want to say thank you so much. I really appreciate you being on. This has been quite wonderful conversations, and looking forward to hearing more sermons from you, Pastor.
Thanks, Churchill. This is amazing, man. Congratulations.
Father Paul Daniels is currently an assistant priest at the Cathedral Church of St. John the Divine in Harlem. He's a graduate of Morehouse College and Yale University Divinity School. He currently is a PhD student in the theology department at Fordham University. His research focuses on the theological anthropology and mysticism of Howard Washington Thurman in conversation with Black theology, Black feminist literal criticism, Black queer and trans studies, and critical theory. If you enjoyed today's episode and podcast, please rate and review on Apple and Spotify podcasts. It takes listeners like you that keep the podcast going. And most importantly, as always, be kind to yourself.